Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.
This is Secrets of Wealthy Women from the Wall Street Journal, helping women empower themselves financially.
Welcome to a special edition of Secrets of Wealthy Women. On this episode, we revisit three powerful women who've thrived after putting a divorce behind them. Divorce lawyer Laura Wasser, tech entrepreneur Rana El-Khalyoubi, and business leader Sheila Johnson have all triumphed after a breakup, becoming a stronger, more powerful woman on the other side. Celebrity divorce lawyer Laura Wasser has taken on some of the highest profile Hollywood divorce cases from clients including Britney Spears and the Kardashians. Also a tech entrepreneur, she's now using technology to bring her expertise to the mainstream.
You started your career as a disability lawyer and then switched to matrimonial. How come?
Because I needed to get divorced. I got married after my second year of law school, and very shortly, we were young. We were 25 years old, and we probably rushed into it. We had a gorgeous wedding, and it was a lot of fun. But about a year later, right after I took the bar exam, we sat down and said, you know what? I really like you, but I can't imagine us like being married for the rest of our lives or having kids with each other. We're just so, so, so different. So I went to my father, who was a family law practitioner, and I said, I need to get divorced. And he said, good, go ahead. I'm never paying for another wedding. And I said, and I need some money. And he said, well, you can come work here instead of working for disabled people. It's all thankless. And I said, okay. So I started working there. I waited for my bar results, and I continued. And I'm actually now the managing partner at our law firm, which is a small boutique family law firm in Southern California.
What did you learn from your own divorce?
I learned to practice what my parents had preached, both in their life when they got divorced when I was a teenager, and how my father had always practiced family law, which is with a great deal of respect and civility for the other person. And again, my ex and I did not have anything to divide. I always joke we had some credit card debt and a dog, and I got both. But really, if there's, it is a business transaction. And so all of the grief and all of the pain and all of the fear that people experience during a breakup are all very real, but they should not be applied to the financial transaction of dividing things up, particularly if you don't have very much.
How do you do that, though, when you are so emotionally involved?
What I would like to see people beginning to do, and I think we are seeing this in the trend of conscious uncoupling or gentle separation, as now I'm hearing, is that people get whatever they need in terms of the mental and emotional counseling and help to get through that part of it, and then address the other part, really coming at not only with respect, but with some knowledge. People need to educate themselves on what the laws are in their state, preferably before they get married, but if not, then at least while they're going through the process, so it's not so scary and miserable, and so that they can really compartmentalize the difference between what is a legal and financial transaction, which shouldn't be too complicated, and then the emotional part of it.
How come Hollywood marriages often don't last?
Well, how come any marriages often don't last? It's just that we read about it more in Hollywood marriages because I guess celebrities are more interesting to read about than your normal, you know, suburban neighbor that's getting divorced. We hear about them. I think Hollywood is a difficult place to conduct a long-term marriage or relationship because there's a lot of temptation, and particularly with celebrities, whether they be traveling athletes, whether they be touring musicians or actors and actresses, and frankly, anybody that's on affiliated in that world, whether you're a director or you're a crew member, if you are traveling, you're away from home. And that makes it difficult to have the consistency that is often necessary to conduct a relationship. So that's one thing that makes it hard, too.
Part of your divorce advice is to be nice. How can women do that if their soon-to-be ex has done nasty things to them?
I say to people often, go back and find a place in your relationship where you really love this person. You had to love them at some point when he was in the delivery room with you holding your hand, when he got down on one knee and asked you to marry him. Yes, there's a lot of water under the bridge in most relationships, and there has to be, particularly if you have kids, a way for you to be able to forgive that person at least enough so that you can co-parent with him. It's not easy, and it's not always consistently nice. But remember that this is a person with whom you have the most important humans in your life, and you're not going to get away from him even after they turn 18 or 21. He or she is always going to be around. So not only for the benefit of your kids, but for the benefit of your face. I mean, if you're constantly making a miserable face, you're going to get wrinkles. Take a meditation class, get a massage, go have a glass of wine with some girlfriends, and try to let it go. It's better for you.
How can women protect themselves financially in divorce?
Well, again, that depends on where you're coming at it. If you're the breadwinner, there'd be one way to financially protect yourself. If you're the person who would be the recipient of support, there'd be other ways. My biggest advice that I can give to women, to all people really, is to educate yourself. Know what you're getting into. Know the laws in your state before you get married. Whether or not you need a prenup, I can't say sitting here, but I definitely think that you should know that when you walk down the aisle, you are entering into a contract. So many of us sign up for our wedding venue, officiant, florist, dress, cake, string quartet. We sign all these contracts, but we don't really think about the fact that walking down the aisle and actually getting married is one of the biggest contracts there is, and we don't even know the terms. So I would say educate yourself even going in, and then throughout the marriage, be aware of your financial situation, even if you're not the breadwinner. I see so many women in my private practice, gorgeously clothed, perfect hair, skin. They could make a restaurant reservation at any of the hot restaurants in town simply by being Mrs. So-and-so. They have personal shoppers at Neiman Marcus and Barney's. And when they come in, they say, I'm so embarrassed to say this, but I have no idea what we even have or what we make or what we spend. And I say, well, I'll tell you one thing. You will never be in this position again. You will learn everything about it. I think there would be so much less fear and probably a better feeling of partnership if we as humans all were kind of involved in what the financial aspects of our lives were, particularly, again, if we have children. Have a family meeting once a month. Sit down. Not necessarily with your kids, but sit down with your spouse, go through the finances, figure out how much you're putting away for retirement. How much do you have to spend on vacation? If it's not going to be a good one this year, maybe it'll be a good one next year. Do we have something for a rainy day? Are our kids going to go to private school or public school? How much does that cost? What about a college account? What are we doing there? Knowing these things will give you a tremendous sense of power and also take away the fear whether you're getting divorced or not.
What do you say to people who think a prenup isn't romantic?
They're right. It's not romantic, but it's not supposed to be romantic. There's all kinds of other romantic things incident to getting married. But a prenuptial agreement is not one of them. Either is a lease. Either is probably any of those contracts I just mentioned that you sign when you're getting married. Totally not romantic or sexy. But I do believe that if you have those conversations that go into a prenup, whether you end up having one or not, because you may not need one, you will be better equipped to deal with the conflict that may come up throughout your marriage. And it will come up throughout your marriage. Get real, folks. If you're going to spend the next however many years with this person, there's going to be conflict. So what you need to do is make sure that you're armed with the communication tools to get through those conflicts and get into better times.
Coming up, more stories of strength and new beginnings from women who are thriving after divorce.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
I'm Sheila Johnson. I'm CEO and founder of Salamander Hotels and Resorts and also vice chairman of Monumental Sports and Entertainment in Washington, D.C.
So, Sheila, you went through a very public divorce. What advice do you have for women who are going through a nasty divorce?
Well, you know, it's different for every single woman. Mine was really very humiliating. And it was a case that I knew 2 years before filing that I had to get out of the marriage. So I made sure that I knew where everything was kept. I knew where the finances were because I'm the one that always paid the bills. And more than anything, I wanted to make sure my kids were taken care of. And it was important that I really did my homework to find the right lawyer that was going to really take care of me and my children.
You and Robert co-founded BET. What advice do you have for female entrepreneurs who are trying to launch their own business?
There's so much advice I can give them. First and foremost, probably one of the biggest, I'm not going to call it a failure, but it was a big lesson. I brought the wrong people around me. And when you're in such a high, when you're going through something like a divorce, which is really frightening, and you feel exposed out there and you just want to have friends. And one thing I realized, I didn't have any friends. There were people that like to associate with both of us, but both men and women on each side, they would tend to go towards the man. And I really realized that as a woman, I was alone. And I was desperate to find kinship, friendship, people that were going to help me get through the darkest time of my life. And I found that isn't true. And I lost $12 million of my money by hiring the wrong people to help me start my company. So if there's any lesson in life, please do your homework. Be careful that you don't bring people into your environment that come in with their own agenda, that are really riding on your coattails, and I call them energetic vampires, to make sure that they're able to share your vision and understand your vision and have respect for you as an entrepreneur. And that took about 4 or 5 years for me to get through that. But it was on top of getting a divorce, it was an ugly time in my life. And the other thing, everybody could not, and especially banks, couldn't see that I had money. They could not see that I'm a smart woman and I knew what I wanted to do. I had a clear business plan and I really knew what I wanted to do, but no one really had respect for me as a woman and as an African American. So there were a lot of life lessons during that time period. And I was finally able to put together a team of people who really understood what I was going through, because it was not only just the business plan, but I was fighting an entire community who did not want me to come in and build a resort. So I was fighting that also. And it was a struggle. It was a war that was going on, me privately and also publicly. I mean, what I was going through was always written up in the papers, from my divorce to trying to build a hospitality company. So there's definitely some lessons. Be careful who you bring around you and make sure that they trust you, have respect for you, and vice versa.
How do you figure out who to trust?
Well, I think after going through what I went through, your instincts just start to sharpen. And you ask the right questions. You know, where they want to go in life, what do they see that they're going to get by working with me? What is their life going to look like on this journey with me? Or do you want to stay with me, or is this just another jumping board platform onto another company? It's instinct. It's really instinct. It's very hard to say. And also doing some investigating. I actually hired an investigation company that would really do background checks on people that I hired. And if there was any red flags there, I didn't go any further. Because if there were red flags there, they were going to show up much later in life.
When you were opening your resort in Virginia, as you alluded to before, you got death threats.
Yes.
How did you deal with the pressure of that?
Again, I'm lawyered up. I got some good land use lawyers. I had my own personal lawyers that actually had become my best friend in going through the divorce. I mean, he said to me, and I still have that letter to this day, of how, of all the clients that he had so much respect for the way I handled myself, because the divorce being very public and the betrayal was horrific. But you know, as Michelle Obama says, go high if they go low, or go low if they go low, go high. I did not stoop to their level. And he really admired the way I handled myself, my character, my integrity. And so we still work together to this day. But I surrounded myself with legal people that I trusted, that that could help me through the legal process. And again, I hired security to make sure that both myself and my kids' lives were taken care of.
What continues to motivate you?
I love what I'm doing. I love my life now. I have total control over my own life. I love my employees. I have over 3,000 employees. You know, my company's called Salamander. And the salamander is the only, mythically, the only animal that can walk through fire and still come out alive. And if you cut off the limbs of the salamander, it regenerates. I live that motto every day. And the salamander stands for perseverance, courage, and fortitude. And I say that to myself every morning. What gets me out of bed is to be able to provide the best leadership possible for all my employees. I have to be an example for all of them. And I have to make sure that they respect me.
I'm Rana El-Khayoubi, co-founder and CEO of Affectiva.
So Rana, you said your education and career path is unusual for an Egyptian Muslim married woman. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. So when I studied computer science as an undergrad at the American University in Cairo. And after I graduated, I got a scholarship to go do my PhD at Cambridge University. At the same time, I was getting married. And so, you know, a good Egyptian wife would basically follow her husband. But I had this opportunity to leave, you know, to leave Cairo and go to Cambridge. And my husband at the time, he's my ex now, but at the time he had a company that he ran in Cairo, so he couldn't really move with me to Cambridge. And both my parents were quite skeptical. I mean, they had always supported my education, but they really weren't on board with this idea of me traveling abroad to do my PhD and leaving my husband behind. So I think it really made me a misfit by Egyptian standards. But I guess I was driven by this mission to really redefine technology and how we interact with it. And that was, that was this intrinsic motivation that made me do it anyways.
What's your advice for women who want to do something different than cultural norms?
It's kind of interesting because now that I've done it, I know a lot of young Egyptian, but also like just across the world, women who'll come to me and say, you know, I'm engaged. Do you think I can also do my master's at the same time? And I'm like, yes, you can. You go, girl, right? So I think we need more role models and examples that show that it can be done, that it's doable. So my advice is to find supporters, like even if you just have one champion who will support you through the journey or the process, I think that's very important. You'll run into a lot of naysayers, and the trick is to listen politely, but just move on.
Not take that feedback seriously or...
Yeah. I also actually found that I'm often my harshest critique. There was one example later on after we had started the company, and I was the chief technology officer at the time, and I had the opportunity to step into the CEO position. And I just had so many, like there was this voice in my head that kept saying, oh, you can't do it. You're not ready. And once I overcame that voice, it was a lot easier to convince everybody around me, including the board and other members of the company. I would say, you know, just trust yourself, put more trust in yourself. I think women have very high standards and very high bars in general. They don't need to be that high. People saw it, but no, you know, our board saw it. I mean, this was my technology. I had a lot of experience building it, but also marketing it. I'm obviously extremely passionate about the company and the technology. So I check all the boxes. I was already kind of the face of the company, you know, on stage talking about the technology. But I had never done it before, right? I was never CEO before. And I think there was this part of my brain that just kept doubting that I could, you know, step up and get this done. But first-time CEOs do it all the time, right? So I think once I convinced myself and I kind of built some internal confidence to take this to our board, it was straightforward. So I grew up in a society where women are often not financially independent. You often either rely on your dad or on a partner. And so I've had very, very little financial education growing up, if you like. And when I ended up being a single mom of two kids, I really had to rethink my financial strategy. The best financial advice I ever got was basically that you can start small with little investments, being very purposeful about your financial goals was very helpful. So I started, you know, I started tracking not just where I was spending my money, but also I had very clear goals on what I wanted to do. So when I first moved to the U.S., my first goal was to buy a house. And that was big for me because I'd never been financially independent. But I put that as a goal and I worked towards it, got that done, and have progressed from there.
What words of inspiration do you have for single moms?
You know, get yourself to a happy place. That's really, really key. Work on yourself first. It's like when you're, you know, when you're on a flight and they tell you like you have to put the oxygen mask on yourself first before you can put it on other people. I think that's so true. Ensure that you're taking care of yourself, whether it's exercise or sleeping well or just making time to decompress. And then that's gonna flow to your kids and your work. Emotions are very contagious. So if you think about it that way, if you're positive, then you're spreading this positive energy around you. But if you're constantly depressed and beating yourself up, that's just gonna also be the energy you're spreading out.
Be sure to check out our ebook based on the Secrets podcast. WSJ subscribers can download their copy of Resilience, How 20 Ambitious Women Use Obstacles to Fuel Their Success, for free on WSJ.com today. This episode was produced by Tanya Bustos. I'm Veronica Dagger. Thanks for listening.